welcome back to the Up North Podcast. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Kirk Bankstead with us, along with Kristen Bry, and joining us now, State Assembly Representative Francesca Hong. Representative
Hello.
Hong. Hello. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Glad to be here.
You know, I was explaining on another radio program, they said, well, it's the Up North Podcast, and you're talking to a Madison rep. We talked to a Milwaukee State rep, Evan Goyke, last week. I said, yeah, it's kind of tough to talk to Democratic legislators from up north when, you know, we don't have Jim Holperin or Russ Decker or Roger Bresky, Bob Jauch, or some guy, Kreitlow, you know, there anymore. And so when we want to get that progressive viewpoint of what other progressives up north need to hear, they need to hear from folks like you who, frankly, we're all very grateful that you're serving and not just occupying a seat, not just keeping it warm, but actually, you know, walking the walk, talking the talk, and tweeting the tweet. And it's where I want to kick things off, because I've already done more than I have in my legislative career. Of course, there wasn't Twitter back then, of referring to Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce as whiny little bitches. And I just want to thank you for your service right there. There's nothing else you need to do. But my first question to you is to explain the context of that, because they and a whole lot of the business community is trying to get an upper hand on this labor shortage where they have no business trying to get the upper hand. What do you mean by that?
Wisconsin manufacturers and commerce, I want to go back to what was written on their building wall this past summer, and that, you know, they have stolen more than, I think that's what it said, but they literally have stolen from the people of the state. And when I see legislators, when I see business owners, when I see other lobbyists that consistently insult the people in this state, calling them lazy, saying that they are not motivated to go back to work, I don't know how that doesn't make every single legislator in this body furious. So I went into mama bear mode. And the fact is, and especially in the hospitality industry, yes, we have seen what is traditionally called a labor shortage, which I know a lot of folks are calling a crisis right now, which is wild that they would call this a crisis and not the fact that 7,000 people died of COVID-19 in Wisconsin. What we are seeing is that hospitality in particular is a very individualized sector. And so when you see higher wages, generally that drives down labor. And so they're fabricating more lies, which is what a lot of my colleagues across the aisle tend to do. And it's really unfortunate that the collateral damage of that is, again, the people of Wisconsin and the integrity and the dignity that they deserve to be served. And we are serving them. They are our bosses. Well, how would you feel if your bosses called you lazy, you know? And they are literally not answering to their bosses, who should be the people of Wisconsin. Instead, their bosses are people who serve the Wisconsin WMC, the people who serve, unfortunately, sometimes, the realtors. I go back and forth, but they shouldn't be answering to special interests. They should be answering to the people.
Yeah. Yes. Well, I just want to step back, because every time I've ever been on Sharp Elbows, also on 92.7, either Nada or Francesca introduces me as the brilliant, phenomenal. So let me take my chance to first introduce Francesca as the firebrand, amazing, sharp-tongued, like, badass woman that since I first saw you on Twitter, I've wanted to be friends with you. So thank you for coming on our show. Now back to the WMC. So the thing that I've seen, because it's such a dumbed down way to pinpoint what's happening, because I've seen multiple different things, because I spend so much time on social media, because it's sure, there's probably some people who are appreciating the fact that I can at least get by the same way I got by having to work on unemployment. But there's also people who found different ways to make money. Like, we live in a digital age, and the people who were not affected during COVID were people like me who had a skill set that was still valuable without having to actually show up to a physical location. And so as people are resilient people, maybe they got on Upwork, maybe they got in Fiverr, maybe they taught themselves different skill sets that don't require them to be in a bad working situation where they can work from home and still make money.
Or maybe
And
they
they
had
just
the opportunity
reevaluate.
to do that because of the enhanced benefits that they were receiving. There is
Exactly.
no evidence, zero evidence, that receiving benefits discourages people from looking for work. What it does is it creates opportunities for you to look for work. Because maybe you had money to pay a babysitter. Maybe you had money to go buy a new outfit for an interview. Maybe you had money to be able to go and, you know, shop at a cafe and use their internet because you don't have internet at your home. So expanding opportunities for people to find to find work, that's what enhancement benefits, that's what unemployment benefits does. There is zero evidence that it is disincentivizing workers from going back.
What?
And if those wages on unemployment are the same as what you were working, and I would say the average hospitality worker full time, their salary is around $20,000 a year. Those incredibly low wages that are in the hospitality industry is what is driving those labor shortage numbers. And we are not looking at this from the correct lens. And again, I need to reiterate that unemployment and benefits, those enhancements, are not what is disincentivizing workers from going back. It is creating opportunities for them to enter the workforce again.
Kirk.
So Francesca, you just took me on a whole different tangent, because we talked earlier, you know, right after the election, and you're a chef, you owned a restaurant, I owned a brew pub. We share a lot of similar kind of experiences. I was going to ask you about, you know, all this withholding of stimulus money and restaurants going out of business. That was my original question, but you just hit me so hard on hospitality workers not making enough money, and I pulled my hair out trying to figure out how to make the economics work of running a brew pub and not paying my cooks anything more than $15 an hour, paying my servers more than $3 an hour, and hoping that somebody would tip them well. And I came to the conclusion that until there are laws that force all restaurants to pay their workers a living wage and to get rid of tipping, the restaurant industry cannot do it and won't do it. We have to all be forced to do it at once. Talk to me about that.
I agree. Our industry is very broken, and that's what so many other restaurant owners and folks in the food and beverage industry talk to me about. They want to be able to offer a minimum of $15 an hour. They don't know how can they take tipping away, because some servers were walking away with $200-$300 a night, where we still had workers in the back of the house that were barely making $13-$12 an hour, doing really hard, difficult labor. And so I think you're absolutely right in that if we don't make this the norm, if we don't have pressure from both government policies and the fact that we have to bring diners into this as well. Diners have to recognize that food has been artificially priced low for many, many years. This industry, when I say it's broken, it's permeated these false notions of what the true cost of food and running a restaurant is. We know now that profit margins are minuscule. We know now that restaurants, but also are very community oriented. So I think restaurants are that you see being successful that can still pay their workers well, and they can, you know, offer benefits and really help people build careers, are ones whose reputations are really, you know, they've invested in those relationships with their clients. But you're right that we have to normalize the fact that there's going to be a service fee, and a server might tell you that this service fee is to make sure that everyone in this building gets a living wage. This service fee is to, and if you want a tip on top of that, great, but it's allowing us to keep our jobs and have dignity in our jobs. And so it needs to be a common, just there needs to be a lot of education, both in the industry, but also to our guests, to let them know that, hey, why don't you frequent the ones that are doing the right thing?
And in so doing, there, you know, the not that WMC has a counterpart, but there are groups that try from time to time. And right now, one of them is Main Street Alliance. And you know, the point that is being made is that by having government set a level playing field, you no longer have small, hometown, locally owned businesses that are caught up in this race to the bottom by their larger national customers. A lot of people will tell you that, you know, one of the things about, you know, capitalism that works is competition leads to these efficiencies, et cetera, et cetera. That's fine in some areas. But when we're talking about competition to pay as little as possible, and that people are relishing in that as if it's some sign that something's working, I don't think they could be more wrong. It is a sign that things are broken here, and so it's. And yet, you're hearing from people just this week in an assembly session. If I heard right, there was somebody on the other side of the aisle talking about how you Democrats never sign the front of a paycheck. You only sign the back of a paycheck. And I think somebody better say to him, hey, pal, you're not going to have any checks to sign the front if you can't find the workers because you treat them like crap.
I still sign checks by hand, by the way. I've signed many checks, many fronts of checks. And I think it is, it's an absolute disservice to service sector workers if we don't advocate for that level playing field. And also remember that these larger policies like paid leave, having affordable childcare, having 3K, you know, having a universal larger minimum wage, these aren't mandates. This is literally what's going to be able to allow businesses to make investments in their workers. And it's disheartening that we've got a legislature right now that wants to mandate singing the national anthem at sporting events, but you can't mandate masks.
Right. Kristen?
I sang the anthem at many, I sang at our wiffle ball championship. Oh my gosh.
Wiffle ball championship.
Where's rookies? Why can't I think? Is that Mazo? Mazo.
Yeah.
I've been out to Mazo and I sang the national anthem and now.
Is wiffle ball?
I wasn't forced to.
Did you just ask if wiffle ball was a sport?
No. Is wiffle ball just wiffle like the only thing difference with wiffle ball? Wiffle ball is just the ball itself. Is everything else just baseball?
You could throw crazy sliders and stuff. I mean, the pitches are insane in wiffle ball.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. Good to know. All right. Let's change gears and end on a higher note. I want to switch to the Hmong education bill that you introduced last week that I think is on its way to be signed.
So the Hmong Lao Veterans Day bill will be on the governor's desk on Friday, which is incredibly exciting. This is a bill that the Hmong community, that the false campaign promises that has been made to these people, they've been treated like a political football, just tossed around. And I think that this is a really big step in just recognizing and affirming their contributions, that they are part of the Wisconsin story, that they are integrated into the Wisconsin story. And I'm very excited for this bill to be signed on Friday. We have also introduced the Hmong Education Migration Act. This is Representative Snyder and Senator Wimberger are the leads, but the work was really done by Representative Katrina Shankland in previous sessions. And what we're doing is that there's Act 31. It talks about including curricula around the history of and human relations in relation to African Americans, Native Americans, and Hispanics. And Hmong Americans and Asian Americans were intentionally excluded from this act because there was anti-Hmong sentiment after they had that they arrived in Wisconsin in the late 70s as refugees. And so there was a lot of fear around, you know, again, workers being pitted against each other, that they were going to take jobs, that they were going to not be able to assimilate it into Wisconsin culture. And that literally was the driver of why they were not included in this act. So we reintroduced it with the inclusion of Asian Americans, Pacific Islanders, and Desi Americans, as well as Hmong Americans as a standalone in the act. So we're circulating right now, and we're really hoping that we can get it through committee and to the assembly floor.
Well,
see, this is problems that need solutions. And here, this is what that looks like. So that's awesome.
It is. And in the 1 minute that we have left, Francesca, you know, again, for folks, whether they're moderate, progressive, you know, soft center, right, you know, folks that live up north, what do you feel like they should know about their hometown legislators, the things that either they're doing or not doing when it comes to standing up for their constituents, or are they standing up for their donors, or is it all ideological? What do you feel like they don't know about their hometown lawmakers?
I don't think they know that their hometown lawmakers are perpetuating harm, and that they're talking about, they're using words like accountability and transparency. But when you're a legislator in a gerrymandered state like we are, you don't have to answer to constituents because your seat is warm no matter what you do. So who are they answering to? I think it's absolutely right for every Wisconsinite to demand that their legislators show up to their community, that they meet the communities where they are, that they answer the phone, that they talk about issues that really matter to them, and that they invest in their communities. There is so much talk about the budget and making sure that we have a healthy budget, and that's great. But why are we not talking about investing in people and the policies that are going to help invest in people, like expanding Medicare, like making it easier to access, quality health insurance, that the fact that we have all of these different ways to to make a healthier budget, like decriminalizing marijuana, that these types of policies, they don't have to be seen as left or right. They should be Wisconsin policies for Wisconsin people, and Wisconsin legislators should have to answer to people when they want us, if they're literally talking about things that are impacting people's everyday lives and livelihoods.
State Representative Francesca Hong, it was so great to meet you, to have you on the show. Hope we can do it many more times. Thanks so much.
Absolutely.
We'll take a break here and come back with cheeseheads, chuckleheads, or both. You're up north.